When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time today. Whatever it means for you in your club, we'll talk about that later.
Welcome to another episode of We'll Talk About That Later, a podcast about football. Mostly about opinions, sometimes about facts, depending on who you ask. Since you're here listening to us, subscribe to us on your favourite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, Google Podcasts, wherever. We are there. And follow us on social media as well. We're on Instagram and Twitter at WTATL Official. And we're also on TikTok at WTATL.podcast. Now, I'm about to tell you what episode we're on.
112.
We're on episode 112.
It's going to be a while for me to get used to that.
Well, Abdi, you're back. Welcome.
Welcome back.
How are you feeling?
I'm good, thanks. It was actually a very easy COVID, to be honest.
You survived the Rona.
Yeah. I had the Aubameyang variant.
What's that? Break it down.
I don't go to work. Or I come late.
Or not many touches in the box. Opposition box. Yeah. Mark?
Yeah, I'm good, bro. It's good to have you back, Abdi. I'll be real.
Thank you.
Last week, now that you're here and the week's gone, I feel like I can say it now. Mm-hmm. But someone said it on Twitter or Instagram anyway. You sounded like you was fully underwater last week.
Yeah.
So it's good to have you back in the flesh.
Thing is, I even showed you guys, I had proper light.
I know, yeah, 5G.
So, but the thing is, I noticed when I listened to it back, that when I was speaking, I didn't realise parts of what I was saying was getting cut off because you were talking over me. So most of the time it was me saying something and Mark going, let me ask you a question. Just
No, as well, you were going, bro, bro, bro.
Yeah, a few times, yeah. But still, we made it through.
Yeah.
But we've lost
and one. And you're here to tell the tale. Oh, yeah, we have lost one. Only for today. She'll be back fighting fit next time we pod. And that's Tanya. Get well soon.
She got the Rona too.
Got the run. It's licking us down. But me and Junior are the only ones standing at the moment. Yeah.
Still negative. Touch wood.
We are. But forget the Rona, man. Forget all that.
Before we get started, yeah, I've got something. Junior, it was your birthday recently, isn't it?
Yeah.
I
would have given it to you last week, but obviously I had the Rona. So look at this. I've got your shirt. It is. For the listeners, it's a Getafe training kit. For some reason, they got a name on the back. And guys, who's on the back?
Cucurella.
Cucurella, yes. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Junior looks exactly like Cucurella. But it's a Getafe train. I don't know why they've got their names and number on the back of a training top.
But you know what? No, it's nice though. I like the joke there.
Yeah,
look, young Cucurella.
It hasn't got any sponsor or anything like that. It literally just has a club badge on the front. And I was going to get you a Brighton top, but that's too expensive.
I need you walking around. I need you going over to Spain. I just need you to walk around in that top and see what happens.
Yeah, I was going to get you a Brighton one, but then I was like, I don't want to spend that much money on Junior. And then I didn't know. I had to Google another club he played for. And then randomly they have a training top with his name and number on the back. So I was like, perfect.
Fair enough. Thank you, Abdi.
No worries. Mark's looking at me like, where's my top? I can't
believe it. Trust. All now my birthday was what, like 2 months ago?
It's true. Yeah.
Waiting for that top, boy.
Do you want me to get your Bruno Fernandes one?
Why are you breaking my
Bruno, you know? Yeah.
In that picture you put up on Instagram, you looked a bit like Bruno.
No, he did not. You're crazy, bruv. All right. Order. Sorry, Mark. We're going to have to talk about a game that's probably been the talk of everyone recently.
Great game.
Spurs versus Liverpool.
Great game. I don't know why. Tottenham. Sorry, I know. I've been in a bit of a mood recently. You don't have to apologise. Okay. I mean, arguably, that was the game of the season.
I think the 2-2 against Man City was better.
Or the 2-2 against City. But in terms of the chaoticness and the pace, that Spurs-Liverpool game is up there as a contender at the very least.
I'm only apologising because you're probably tired of talking about it.
That's true. And reading about it. But as they say, you get it all out, you move on. Some of us have cup games this week. Mm-hmm. You're tonight, actually, as we record. So that's another chance for us to draw behind us, get a W, move on into the semis.
You got Leicester, innit?
Got Leicester. So it'd be interesting game. Spurs at West Ham. You got the one team.
We've got a tough game against Sunderland.
Everyone wanted it.
You know, Arsenal are going to make it really tough.
Who have Chelsea got? Brentford away.
Yeah.
So, not we've got the easy tie. I mean, we really should be going through that without E. Mm-hmm. But on the game,
yeah.
Tanya messaged us. She was like, make sure you give Spurs their props. No. So I feel like, although I don't want to, but you have to give Spurs their props.
Yeah, you do.
That was probably one of their best performances. Although, like, I wouldn't say it was like a complete performance. Obviously, like they conceded two goals, and they didn't win purely because of an error. Well, the reason they got a point was an error. So I give them their props though.
No, but also you could say that the reason that they didn't win is also, because they're so profligate in front of goal.
Yeah, yeah. But still, like, that was the most chances I've seen them create this season.
And against Liverpool as well.
Exactly, yeah. So what they did really well was they knew that Liverpool playing a high line and they popped it over the top time and time again.
The interesting thing was that Harry Kane and Son never came back. They always just stayed occupying the defenders.
Yeah. You could tell from the first minute that was the game plan
to
isolate Kane and Son, which is, you think about a pairing up top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't get much worse than Kane and Son as a pairing up top.
Yeah.
And it looked like the plan, you could see it so early on, was to just isolate them with
our two
centre-backs.
I think you meant was don't get much better.
What did I say?
You said don't get much worse.
I was thinking on more the defensive side. That's what Mark was talking about.
No. Actually, thank you, Abby, because I would have got so much
stick from Tanya
and all of the Spurs fans who listened. I actually meant so much better than Kane and Son as a pairing. And like I said, the plan, you could see it straight away. It was evident. Lead them up there, isolate them with the centre-backs. You know already, when you're going to play us, our full-backs will push higher.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite clever from Spurs, actually, because it's not often that teams come up against us, even when we're away from home, and leave two up there and stay and have them stay with our centre-backs. So that was interesting to see.
I think I was surprised in terms of Liverpool. Obviously, I've mentioned before, I don't like the persistence with the high line all the time that Liverpool do. But I mean, when you're at full strength, you can do that because your fullbacks push high and then you've got Van Dijk, is like a cheat code, isn't it? And most of the time, although with the error, Alisson's good coming sweeping out. He's really quick off his line. But in the midfield, what surprised me the most was in the midfield, obviously Liverpool, that's what, fourth, fifth choice trio?
If you started with
Fabinho, Hendo, Thiago in the midfield three, then it's a different game, isn't it? But Tottenham allowed someone like flipping Harry Winks so much. Not Tottenham. I mean, Liverpool allowed him so much space in midfield. I don't know why, because almost every game we played against Liverpool, home or away, they pressed us high.
Mm. Well, I want you to finish this point, but you've got to remember that's the first time that midfield three have ever played together in a game. And we're talking about, like we said,
it's not
chaotic,
your
high octane game that this was. It was a really tough game to come into.
Exactly, innit? So I would say, like, if you're in the pecking order of what Liverpool's preferred midfield three, obviously you've got the three that were injured, well, weren't available, for Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago. You've got Harvey Elliott who's injured. You've got Curtis Jones who's injured. I don't know why he didn't play Ox, but Ox would be ahead of them. I don't know.
Ox maybe has had a lot of minutes recently. That's the only reason I can think of, because I was quite shocked when he didn't start as well. So
maybe I'd only put Keita ahead of Ox, for example, who was in the pecking order. So, and have you ever heard of this guy called Tyler Morton?
Yeah, like, I saw him
before.
Play
I never
Norwich.
Saw him before.
He played against Norwich in the cup. Yeah. He played the full 90 against Milan in the San Siro in our last Champions League game,
and
where
won that
to
game,
be
yeah.
fair yeah we yeah, won the 2-1. Game 2-1, and there was nothing in that game for us, but there was everything in that game for Milan, and he coped it was slightly different for him at Tottenham.
Yeah, I mean, and then Tottenham, they really, like, there was a lot of space in behind Morton, so that's why, like, Matip and Konate struggled a bit, and obviously you're playing against two really, really strong forwards. And I don't know what was up with Harry Kane that day, but it was, especially in the first half, was a much better performance than I've seen him this season at all.
Mm. Well, if you got to think, if he wasn't the one of the ones who had COVID, essentially what he's just had is a 2-week break.
Yeah, and
that would have done a lot of them good. I think it was Gary Neville who said it, actually, and we'll go back actually and we'll cover the goals individually, so we'll start from the first. But I think it was Gary Neville who said, actually, Spurs came out for the second half and you could almost see that first half was almost a warm-up for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came out and they were, you know, quicker to the ball second half, stronger. So it's clear to see where the fresh legs were, but again, to me, that doesn't matter. You play the game that's in front of you.
Yeah.
We've played a lot of football recently. There were some fresh legs in there, but again, I just think there was too much chop and change for us in that 11. particularly in the midfield. And obviously when you're missing the best centre-back in the world, it's going to be difficult to get to grips with a different Spurs team to one that we've played in the past 3 or 4 years, you know, with the 5-3-2, isolating the strikers at the centre-backs, etc. We covered this.
In my honest opinion, I saw a lot of criticism to your defence. And I'll be fair, the ball over the top was far too frequent. Like, they got in so many times. But, like, on a 1v1 basis, I don't think Konate and Matip were that bad. Especially Konate. I thought Konate was good.
Konate in particular, I thought was really good.
Yeah, so I don't think they were that bad. But, I mean, I feel Liverpool were too confident with the high line. You haven't got Van Dijk. Although, like, stylistically, Konate is not that different from Van Dijk. So he's not a slow centre-back like you had last season. So he's slower than Van Dijk. Van Dijk is super quick, and obviously he brings fear amongst forwards, isn't it? So I don't know why Liverpool didn't press Winks or like the press him a little bit higher, a bit higher up, for example, when Eric Dier got on the ball. So it was just too frequently.
I think it was tricky because that gap from between Winks and then Kane and Son was so big that if you committed numbers to Winks, you know, and they bypass that press, it immediately works in Tottenham's favour because they've isolated their attackers with your centre-backs, as we've spoken about many times now. Mm-hmm. So that press was difficult. With the high line, I hear what you're saying, but that's us.
That's how
we play football. It enables us to press from the front. You know, our front three are the best pressers in world football, arguably the best. And that high line, it gives them that platform to go and do that.
Yeah,
It's an interesting one, but Spurs' first goal... you've got a great ball from Ndombele, to be fair. And I can't lie, I know Kane hasn't been Kane of the past few seasons this season, but as soon as he was slipped through, there was no doubt in my mind that wasn't hitting the back of the net. Yeah.
Gary Neville celebrating. Did you hear him? Oh my God. You're not England coach anymore, bro. He was like, oh. Shut up, man. But, and then you lot equalised. Quality cross from
Robertson. What I was going to say is that I think one thing that I noticed was in your midfield, you definitely missed Fabinho because for a lot of Spurs counterattacks, I feel like Fabinho would have cut a lot of those balls, the second balls. So when they've got it down and they're picking out a man, I think Fabinho would have been there mopping up.
I agree with you. Let me put it this way. They wouldn't have been able to isolate Kane and Son with our two centre-backs as they did with Fabinho on the pitch because he would. There's a massive difference in having your first choice defensive mid there.
Yeah.
You know, one of the best defensive, and then a 19-year-old who's making his first start in the Prem.
He's 19.
19, making his first start in the Prem.
I'll give him some slack.
No, this kid's a good player. Yeah. In terms of his physicality, he's nowhere near where he needs to be. But in terms of technique and vision, really good centre mid. It's just he wasn't able to show that on the day.
I don't know why you didn't just play Milner as the deep, like the holding midfielder, and then bring in Ox. Mm-hmm. Ox has been all right defensively this season.
It's easy to look back at things and ask these types of questions. There would have been a plan.
Yeah.
Not sure what that plan was, but to be honest, when I saw that team, I said to you guys, even in the morning, I said, I'm feeling a little bit iffy about this game later. Spurs essentially had a fully fit squad, I think minus Højbjerg.
I didn't realise he went playing.
Aside from that, they were fully fit. So I kind of knew it would be difficult, and it's not easy going away to Spurs anyway.
Yeah.
Onto the equaliser, it's just Jota. He surprises me how many headers he scores and wins.
He's a short guy as well.
He would have been one of the shortest players on the pitch.
It's the timing of the jump. Like, Robertson's ball is perfect. Like, it dips just after the defender. Mm. And
I remember he scored a bullet header against Arsenal last season.
He's
10 goals, you know. Like, he's one of those players here who everyone rates him, but he still seems like he's going under the radar. 10 goals, second top goal scorer. And obviously, it's difficult to be anywhere near Mo Salah in terms of goals, isn't it? He's a quality player. He's been fantastic this season.
One thing that I was going to say as well is, like, I know it touches a bit on the second half, but I think one thing that I think Liverpool lacked, and again, it's obviously because of your lineup, but I think when you managed to get on the front foot, whether it was a counterattack or you're just attacking through your general play, was just a final ball. Like, loads of times you found, for example, I can only think of this one chance now that Matip, he wins the ball and he drives forward and literally there's a ball on to, I can't remember who's on the right, but he just dallies a little bit and then he plays it too late. And then I think
That's typical centre half. Yeah. You know when you make that run and then you kind of think, I'm in the final.
Was it in the second half where he tried to shoot with his left foot?
Yeah. I should have shot with his left foot, actually. Listen, Matip's the king of that. Matip, Ben White's only the prince. No.
Matip is a better midfielder than Højbjerg.
But yeah, so I was just thinking, it was just like that final ball is all that was missing from Liverpool getting one of these. But then after the equaliser...
Well, before the equaliser, there was the Stonewall red card that wasn't given.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you moved on to the equaliser. I was going to talk about that, but
but then, bro, like, I saw a tweet that really, it made me 100% agree with it. It was saying... Harry Kane's tackle looked fine on the first viewing, but on the VAR it showed that he's the England captain, because that was ridiculous. And in the post-match interview when he was saying, oh, I got the ball,
I won the ball, he didn't touch the ball. I only touched it with his arm after he's slumped.
I think he's so stupid that he didn't realise that it wasn't the ball that he touched.
I think you're always going to say that you got the ball.
No,
it
was a foul.
No, but Paul, you would in Sunday League when there's no cameras. But when you're playing in the biggest league in the world and there's cameras literally watching your every move.
We've seen that before.
I honestly think, these referees are just waiting for someone's leg to break. So they would have sent off, if Robertson got injured, like badly injured, then they would have sent him off.
But they sent
Pogba off for something similar.
Yeah,
but against Liverpool, wasn't it?
Cater's leg was planted. It doesn't matter if Robertson's leg is not planted. Robertson, you know, he managed to evade.
It was a high foot. He had no control of his body. He was just sliding forward.
They take the intent into consideration quite heavily nowadays. Yeah. The intent was there. He was like 3 meters away from him.
He was too pumped, and that was a wild
sprinting
challenge.
I know he was pumped, and that's a very good point because they're 1-0 up.
Yeah.
First time they played football in a couple of weeks, you know, a crowd was bouncing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're 29, you're the England captain, you've been playing football for a long time. If you can't control those emotions, then...
It's a dangerous tackle.
He should have been off. There's no question about it. And considering, like, the other red card, which we'll get... Do you want
No, let's...
Let me just talk, because we will keep it in order, but the second red card, which I agree with, by the way, so there's no questioning of that decision from me, but the questioning is obviously... Why for the second challenge is the ref being sent to
VAR?
But the first one, they're not even telling him to go and have a look. And for me, it's just
inconsistencies.
It's nonsense. Yeah.
Well, another point that would have had Liverpool fans, especially Klopp, unhappy, would have been the right at the end of the second half. I don't know if it was right at the end, but at the end of the second half, Jota gets the ball in a box, and it was a clear push.
That to me, that was a Stonewall
clear push in the back. And it wasn't even checked. Oh, well, it was checked, but it was the ref didn't get to check.
Did you hear what the reasoning he gave to Klopp afterwards was?
No.
He said Jota stopped, so we couldn't give the pen. But Klopp came out in his interview and said, "If you've played football, you know that when you shoot, when you're about to shoot,
you have to stop.
You have to stop."
What did he want to do? Jota to run
just
in the crowd?
Run, like, just
oh yeah, go jump in the crowd, bro.
So no, that was a stone wall. And you said absolutely. It in the chat, Abdi. Yeah. Within 10 seconds of that challenge stone coming wall. In, Abdi was I in thought the they, chat, stone
no,
wall.
No, I didn't even message because I was watching it on my phone, but I straight away I was like, oh, it's a pen.
It's a pen, it's a pen. There's no doubt about it. And Klopp is a clever man because after the game, he said, I don't have any problems with referees, but I have a problem with you. So that is Alex Ferguson to a T. Yeah.
Well, we've had about, I think, 18 bookings in the league this season. 11 have come under him in 3 games.
Exactly. So essentially, like, he put pressure on that guy because, one, they probably won't assign him a Liverpool game for a while.
Yeah.
Or if he does, he's going to feel the pressure to not shake Liverpool.
Yeah.
So it was a clever decision. But
he also said it in his post-match, he was like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said something along the lines of, like, I have no problems, but it's obviously that he has a problem with me, and I would like for him to tell you what the problem is with me.
Do you think it's time then, on that note, because I saw people debating this on Twitter earlier, so you know, a manager will come out and speak after a big loss.
Yeah.
For example, Old Trafford, 5-0, Liverpool away from home, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will come out and speak and explain why he thinks it went wrong. Player will come out and do post-match interviews. Is it time for referees to come out and explain themselves after a game, or do we keep it?
No, absolutely. But one thing that's very clear, especially in this country in terms of refereeing, there's no accountability and they protect each other. So the whole issue with the VAR, I think, is majorly to do with the fact that they don't want to correct their mate's decision or the people, or their colleagues, the peers, the people they work with. Only when it's completely undeniable, even though there were completely undeniable decisions in this one, yeah. where you can clearly, and also I feel like if it's a yellow card decision and you can't change it, there shouldn't, like, nowadays I think the whole VAR has removed the stuff after the game. So like in terms of diving or like whether a retrospective stuff, because VAR is looking at it now, so all of that's been eliminated. But still, even if it's a yellow card decision and you can't do anything about it post-game, I don't think that's where referees hide behind a decision. So a yellow card, they haven't overlooked it. Why isn't their committee looking at a clear yellow card, what Harry Kane did, and overturning it and making it a red? Still, that should be an issue. Mm-hmm. And on top of that as well, like I said, they're cowards. So the admission, so if a referee goes in front of a camera and says, this is why I made this decision, blah, 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 I made this wrong decision, blah, 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 that is almost an admission of making it incorrect. And all of the whole thing is to protect each other. So I don't think that's ever going to happen. It's not realistic.
But I just you're right. And I agree with you. I just think until there's no, while there's no accountability, this will be a common theme continuously, season after season. Because if there's no accountability and you know that you can make the wrong decisions with no repercussions.
I also feel like it's starting to creep in more, like more visibly, the bias, as you pointed out, in terms of like Tierney, is it Paul Tierney or whatever his name is?
Yeah, Paul Tierney.
Paul Tierney refereeing Liverpool games, the amount of yellow cards he gives and all that kind of stuff. But you can start to see clearly some of the biases that some refs have in terms of like games that they referee.
Mike Dean
and stuff.
Arsenal.
Mike Dean is
yeah,
just...
Yeah, yeah. Well, Naby got elbowed in the head and it wasn't intentional. And then he got a yellow card for complaining to the ref. It was 2 or 3 seconds of complaint and that was it. And I saw far worse in that game of players talking to refs.
Yeah, so I think Liverpool did get shagged. Obviously, the Robertson decision, I think that was...
No, that was
a red. I mean...
It was silly.
And I'll be honest, Robertson does that a lot. Like, he's one of those guys. He's like one of the, what do they call it? Wiley or streetwise? He's one of those
streetwise,
guys.
Streetwise? What? So I said Wiley.
Wiley. I don't mean that wire.
No, but like Wiley Coyote. He's like savvy. Yeah, no.
So I always remember the game against Flamengo, was it? In the Club World Cup. And then Mane got into a rift, I think it was Rafinha, who spoke by Munich.
He goes,
Sadio, I'll take care of him.
Yeah.
But he's the type of player you just love so much if he's on your team.
Yeah, exactly. But if he's playing against you, he's one of the first players you hate. He's that kind of guy. Yeah. But yeah, I think that was deserved. But I mean, can we quickly talk about...
Wait, he scored, you know, before he got sent
off.
Oh
yeah, Robertson, yeah. Trent volley, man.
Trent's unbelievable. Yeah. Robertson was arguably man of the match, even with that red.
Yeah.
Goal and assist.
The goal and assist, but they were both just in terms of influencing play. I think it was evident, we've covered this again, that with our first choice midfield lacking, there was more emphasis on those two controlling the game for us. And they did. They really did. And it shows that where we're at in terms of football, modern football, and
fullbacks.
A lot of the time fullbacks are running the game.
So can I ask you a question? Oh, both of you. And you can say, like, perhaps I'm asking this without any prep or whatever, or you can just give me the answer. Are Trent and Robertson as a pair in one team the best fullbacks we've ever seen in the Premier League in terms of like together?
Unquestionably.
Yeah, Gary Neville said it, and I'll be honest, you're talking about a man who has played Premier League football for 15 plus years, won
and
it all.
He's he's widely considered as the best that's in the Premier League.
Him and Dennis Irwin, he's doing himself an injustice by not mentioning them in that conversation. But the fact that he's so clear and concise in his thinking, for me, I think that's unquestionable. And I'd completely agree with
it. The only reason people are hesitant to give them the props that they do is because people don't give people their flowers whilst they're still playing.
Yeah,
it's very much this nostalgia thing as well. Mm-hmm. So people are hesitant to say, like, in my opinion, yeah, the Premier League has not had a massive amount of top quality right backs. So people would think I'm crazy if I say Trent is in the conversation for best right back.
He is already. He is 100%.
Like we've ever seen in the Premier League, 100%. So like the same thing as well. Like I put Van Dijk top three ever in the Premier League in terms of centre backs. But people are hesitant to say that because, oh no, Rio and Terry and all that stuff. But have you ever seen someone who's consistently at this high level? Like we aren't living in an era, right now we're not living in an era where John Terry and Rio are playing every week. We were alive at that point and we were like conscious football fans in terms of we can analyse it. But right now what we're seeing, people are so hesitant to give Van Dijk the props he is as a top centre back because he's playing now. And if we were the way we are now, because we're all like, what, me and you are 30 plus, and Mark, you're what, 28, yeah?
27.
All right, cool. So
you're 30, we're all, Mark, yeah?
Yeah, so we were a kid when the top centre backs, Adams and Rio and Terry and all that stuff. So that's the same thing, like, but the two we've got now in terms of the two full backs at Liverpool, I don't think you don't get that level of quality and consistency. Like Robertson, he's the picture of consistency. He's a picture of energy, intensity. The guy just doesn't get tired, does he? He's the perfect left back, like especially for a manager like Klopp. And Trent, I don't think I've ever seen this level of talent from a right back. Like, the guy is the best playmaker from right back.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. The passing, I don't think that is. People have to give him his respect. Like, they all talk about his defending. I'm not saying he's not a bad defender, but he's not the best defender, is he?
So he's got a lot better this season.
And physically, you can see he's much bigger now as well. Yeah. And his interceptions have always really been good. He's positionally still. There's still things, like, there are right backs who are better than him.
But I hear that positionally, though, because he's so far forward, exactly, and often drops into a central area. Yeah. There will be times when it's definitely open around that right back area.
But the point remains: his talent is undeniable, and I don't think I've ever seen anything like that, especially from a right back. So you to answer your question, you're 100% right. Like, those two are the best combo I've seen in the Premier League,
and that's a combined 8 million. It shows you that's an academy player and 8 million Robertson from Hull. I just think it just shows that there's you place a big emphasis on player development and trust. Mm-hmm. You don't always have to make the big 50 million, 60 million signings.
Talking about quality fullbacks, yeah? Let's talk about the other end of the spectrum. And Emerson Royale. Bro, I googled his name, yeah? I checked his Wikipedia.
He's the one who gave the non-existent penalty as well. Yeah.
I checked his Wikipedia, and the Royal isn't actually his name. He's got one of them, like Anderson, Tuzer, and all that stuff. The Brazilian players have like 16 names.
Wow.
Whereas the Royal is, he used to look like someone who was on like an ice cream packet, and his uncle just gave him that name. He's Royal. So he's anything but Royal, bro. That guy is,
What's the opposite of Royal?
I don't know, bro.
Or even
Prince Andrew.
Pauper. What did you say?
Repeat it.
I said it. Cool. Prince Andrew, you said.
But bro, like, he is, honestly, he makes Matt Doherty look like Cancelo. Oh my God. And he's another from...
He makes Matt Doherty look like
Cancelo. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Bro, he's another one from that lump of, like...
Barcelona.
From Barcelona's, you know, bins, bro. You talk about like the likes of Firpo and Yerry Mina, Andre, Semedo. Bruh, they've got options in terms of the crap they've invested in. And then Tottenham went and got someone from Barcelona's bins, man.
They rejected, they didn't go for Tomiyasu.
For this guy. And
Emerson.
Tottenham fans are comparing, we're saying Emerson is better than Tomiyasu. He's not even as good as Chambers, bro, and Cedric. He's not good, bro.
He is a bit chaotic, and he should have been booked for the foul on... Jota, for the non pen.
I think you need to give props to someone like Winks. He was the best.
But we haven't even talked about the second goal. We just said, oh yeah, Robertson scored.
Oh, Alisson, man.
But then yeah, straight after
Alisson. To be honest, I can't even, because there were times in that game where he saved our ass. Yeah. There was the Dele Alli.
The one that I thought Dele Alli put wide.
Yeah. I honestly thought he put it wide at first until they showed the replays. What a save. And just in general, like you mentioned earlier, because we play such a high line, he was always there.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that he was there again. He was first to the ball for the Son equaliser.
Just missed it.
It's just one of those things. It very, very rarely happens with Alisson, but it did. He'll pick himself up and we'll move on. It's just a shame that
he was fuming at himself after.
Yeah,
he's fuming when we concede a goal, even if we win 6-1. He's not happy.
Go on.
I was just going to say, it's the type of thing you can kind of accept because he's so exceptional.
Kind of accept. I've moved on. No, there's nothing about.
I was just talking about like at the time.
Even you just got. Football is a 90-minute game full of so many unpredictable moments that when they come. Yes, it's a big shock, but at that point, there were still 15 minutes to go, 15, 20 minutes to go, and you're thinking, all right, well,
we go again.
What happens
but then
now.
You literally got a red card right after. Yeah. Was it before or after?
It was after.
Okay. But did you think, did you think it was a fair result? Because I honestly think, like, there was a period of time where literally Tottenham could not get out at all, and Liverpool are pamming them in, like, But then, and then on the balance of play, Liverpool had like majority of possession.
But Spurs had so many chances.
The amount of chance, that's what I'm saying. That's why I think it's a fair result, because the amount of chances Tottenham had, the
Harry,
clear cut
Harry
chances.
Kane, like the header, was it a header?
The header was terrible.
Back post, like how did you miss that?
The chance where Alisson saved it, it was Dele Alli, horrible cutback.
Oh yeah, that was just terrible. I think you're right. I think a point apiece is fair.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, they had the better chances. We controlled the majority of the game. Tanya, if you're listening, let's do her a bit of justice. That's probably the best I've seen Spurs play this season.
And for a while.
And this isn't even a dig, but that wasn't hard because they've been so poor for the majority of this season. But they were really good. They actually shocked me a little bit. You never go away to Spurs and think it's going to be an easy game, but I didn't think they were going to show the fight that they did.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed. They definitely showed a lot of fight. Yeah. There was fight in them, and in the fact, although it was an error, but it still came back into the game, innit? So,
of course.
But Liverpool honestly could have won as well. Do you know right at the end, yeah, when Alisson put that beautiful ball over the top, Tsimikas, he delayed for like half a second.
If he
had played it, like control it and play it, Salah was in, and 100% would have scored.
I put that down to him kind of just being just on, almost still kind of warming up. He had about 8 minutes, 10 minutes.
Not fully caught up.
What impressed me though was that I know we brought Joe Gomez on for the last like 3 minutes, but before that, for 10 minutes or so with 10 men, we were attacking that game like we had 11 men and they had 10. Like we weren't.
Like Abdi touched on, like your interception game is to be a Liverpool fan, yeah, and just feel like we're going to win the ball back at any moment here. Like,
this is what I was mentioning a couple of weeks ago when I was on. I said, Liverpool, they're not scared of anyone. Even with 10 men, they're still going at it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is ill-advised. You know you've got one man less. But then Tottenham were trying to get the overload on, because he didn't have a left-back at that point. They were getting the overload on the right-hand side. And who's the right wing-back? Every single time he got into space on the right, when there was loads of space, the guy, I don't even think he can kick the ball hard enough like for professional football. Like, it was Matip didn't even need to stick his leg out every time he was crossing it. It was just hitting him. And I was just like, this guy is horrible. Like, honestly, it comes to something where I feel like Antonio Conte needs to go give Serge Aurier a ring. Say, bro, come back. I hope Tottenham have got like a buyback clause from Kyle Walker-Peters, bro. Because this guy is horrific. Like, he's not good at all. And I'm sorry, Tottenham fans, but he's not.
Okay, so we'll end on there. Good, really good point for Spurs after not playing for 2 weeks.
I just want to ask you a quick question about Spurs, because we've done a lot of Liverpool chat here. We would have done a lot more Spurs chat if Tanya was fit and healthy today. Unfortunately, that's not the case. But where does that...
She's got a hamstring strain.
She's got a hamstring strain. Where does that... As Arsenal fans, now let's be honest, you might not accept this, but you've worked yourself into a place where you can challenge for top four now, definitely. No questions. Do Spurs worry you, considering what you saw on Sunday? Or was that just because, as most teams do, when Liverpool come to town, you raise your game?
I think Spurs, I don't want to take the focus away from Spurs, but I think Spurs and Man United do, mainly because they have the games in hand, more so Spurs who have 3 games in hand. But yeah, if they play like that, like under Conte, they've looked really structured. They don't concede that many goals.
Oh, and they've officially been booted out of the Conference League now. So they're with you on 1 game a week.
Yeah, so that's the thing. That's gone.
Oh, yeah. So I was just going to say, yeah, like absolutely. And I think we've said it from the very beginning, is who can be more consistent. And if Conte can get Spurs, man, he's made Dyer look really good. So if, and Ben Davis.
Ben Davis, he had Salah in his pocket.
Exactly. Well,
it's the quiet. No, listen, I've got no qualms in speaking about like that. That was definitely the quietest I've seen Salah all season. But you're right, Ben Davis and Eric Dyer were really good.
Just on that point though, like Genie was saying, Conte, he's obviously improved them a lot. There's two things that scare me the most about not just Tottenham and Man United as well. One, Man United, they're both teams look more structured. Two, both teams have more match winners than us. And for Tottenham, I literally just mean Son and Kane. Kane hasn't been amazing this season, but he's still got the capability to win a game for them. Son, same. Man United, obviously, they got guys like Ronaldo and who could win the game for them, even though they've been terrible for 89 out of 90 minutes. but now, like Mark said, Spurs are out of the Europa Conference League, which is embarrassing. First English team to ever get out of every single European competition there's ever been. So hold that. But Conte with 1 game a week, he's a we've seen it with Chelsea and we've seen it with Inter Milan. He's a results guy, innit? So that's what worries me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, just be interesting to see which team can be the more consistent team, whether Conte can keep it up with the players that we know aren't good. Mm. And Tanya has admitted before.
And obviously they've got January transfer window as well.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I think as an Arsenal fan, I'm just kind of happy that we're not rubbish, you know. We're not complete trash. Well,
we can just segue perfectly into it.
Yeah. So, so Arsenal played Leeds as the only game that happened on Saturday due to all the cancellations. Interestingly, Arsenal, as usual, aren't really good away from home. So it was, even though we were going to a Leeds team who had just been battered 7-0 by Man City, I was still kind of like...
We'd only won 2 away games this season.
And we don't score that many away from home. And so for me, it was more like, okay, can we play the same way that we did against West Ham, mm-hmm. against Leeds?
Yeah.
So for me, that's what I wanted to see. I just wanted to see that consistency in performance away from home. Again, I know that Leeds have been on a really bad run and they've got like 12 injuries.
Fortunately, we played against a team that don't practice defending.
Yeah.
I think Bielsa just goes, you guys go out on the pitch and run forward as much as you can until you get tired.
I see like the issue is that when you play man marking the way that Leeds play man marking, like literally Lacazette, if you've watched any Arsenal game that he's played in the last 2 years, he literally plays holding hands with Partey.
Yeah.
So,
yo, what's up, Ramsdale? Spotting
him. So you had Leeds centre back in midfield.
That is ridiculous. Laka dropped deep to the left back position and he followed him.
Yeah. And then we had Martinelli, who's lightning quick, and Saka, who's really quick as well, just exposing the centre space.
It's crazy. Leeds, we'll get onto the game, but Leeds lost 7-0 to City a few days before that. And, you know, they were 3-0 down, kept playing the same way. Oh, yeah. All of a sudden it's 4-0 doing the same things. 5-0, 6-0. They're still tracking men halfway down the pitch. 7-0.
Yeah.
There's a moment where you say, stop.
Well, not even just that.
Low block, compact, tight, let's stop the conceding of silly goals now.
Yeah.
And change just stylistically a little bit where the clean sheet for us is more important than the goals. And at the end of the day, if you keep a clean sheet, you're getting minimum a point. You go out there and get 3 points. If you get a goal, and Leeds need points at the moment.
I said it last season, it's chaotic to play the same way against everyone. Man City is not the same when you're playing against Crystal Palace or Norwich or something like that at home where you can nick a 1-0 or something like that. Or you're playing against Man City. These guys will destroy you. And in mid-game, there's no thought for any of these players to think, all right, our goal difference is taking a battering right now. Yeah. Let's stop. Arsenal had 11 shots on target in the first half, which is a record for the last 6 seasons. No team has ever done that.
And when you consider that this season in particular, your shot on target ratio has really been low. Nowhere near that. Nowhere near that.
Yeah.
It was a good day to get our stats up.
Or chance creation as well. Odegaard had a field day. He don't know, he turned up and someone handed in the key of Ellen Road and he was just doing whatever he wanted.
Let's cover the game then, because the little cheeky ball, the little prod I should call it.
He should
Smith
have had
role.
About yeah. three assists in the first yeah. half. Yeah. Though. Lacazette missed a one-on-one. I think Saka
should have had a hat-trick.
At 0-0 as well. Yeah, that's when you start to think, obviously I know it was easy for you in the end, but at 0-0 you think,
But to be fair, like I looked at that, and I was like, the first minute we're getting a chance to that clear cut. I was this is going to be a long day for them. if we even shoot remotely on target, this could be ugly score for them, innit? But obviously, like, Melier was having a good game and we weren't really that, lethal with our finishing. But... So a lot of people were talking about the fact that Leeds had a lot of injuries, which they did, obviously.
But their first
Bamford
team...
and Calvin Phillips. When I looked at the team, I was thinking, okay, cool. This is going to be like... Before the team came out, I was thinking, all right, this is going to be like a Leeds under 15 team.
But their team...
But it wasn't that bad. Relatively.
It was usually their first team. I wouldn't say it was their first... Sorry, not the first team, but it was their...
It was their first team squad.
Yeah, first team squad. So, yeah.
But when you think about it, Leeds, their defenders, they're not that good anyway. Like, Ayling's half decent, I think. Dallas is not a defender. But
Ayling was playing at centre-back.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about their first choice back four, Firpo's not good.
But he was missing. I think Phillips and Bamford were the only ones missing from that first 11.
Yeah, I mean, but he's not, Firpo's not good, Cooper's not good, Strauch is not good, Llorente's not good.
What about Clark?
Oh my God, how on earth he gets into a Germany squad? It just goes to show that there's not that quality centre backs in Germany. But he's, and then that right back they played, Drame, I think his name is, yeah. Graeme Souness ripped him to pieces. Yeah. But honestly, him and Dan James, they better like start looking for college courses in Leeds because football is not for them, man.
Martinelli had him on toast.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's 20 years old, but yeah, bro, like you still got
Martinelli
time.
Martinelli's 20.
Does it annoy you that
as a defender though?
Does it annoy you that you're seeing this Martinelli now? Could have been seeing that Martinelli for a lot longer.
I've had time to think about this, and I, for all the bad things we talk about Arteta, I think he's managed Martinelli well-ish. This well-ish, because when Martinelli came back from injury, the knee injury he even had surgery, it took a while for him to get going. And the game, I think it was his third game back against Newcastle, he actually got injured again. So, and then bringing him on, Martinelli is the kind of like, it's 100 miles per hour all the time. So if you've got a player who's just had knee injury and he's just had another injury, I think you risk a lot when he can't stop. Like Martinelli's press. He's like chasing up the ball everywhere you go. Yeah. And so like when the start of the season, he had gone to the Olympics, he played against Brentford, but I still don't think he was there.
Of course, we were a shambles that day.
We were a shambles. But like, I don't think he was there in terms of his fitness and stuff. But now I feel like you're seeing a more mature Martinelli, especially from his first season. You're seeing him press at the right time. You're seeing him because before he would just press, but now you're seeing him win the ball back. You're seeing him hound defenders. You're seeing him follow the right back and win the ball back. He nutmegs Souček against West Ham in midweek. And so you're starting to see a more confident Martinelli. You're starting to see someone who kind of understands his role in the team.
His overall play really has been, because that's one of the things that I've been a bit critical of with Martinelli. He's very young, obviously. He's still young. But I mean, when he was, and Arteta said something really really good in the interview. He said he's getting gears to his game. He's not doing everything 100 miles an hour. And that's one of the things we got to know. He was like, a lot of time it was mindless pressing, you know, which can lead to injuries or anything like that. But his overall game, like now when he's like, I thought he's a bit lacking on the technical side. But I mean, now just watching him, just his overall game, the way he's keeping the ball, now he's getting assists as well. Got an assist for Odegaard against Man United. Got an assist for Gabriel against Southampton. And I think one of the main contributors is that when Martinelli was playing earlier this season, the few cameos they was getting, it was alongside Aubameyang, and that's two forwards who don't get that much involved in build up. Having Lacazette there now, I feel like since he's come, Martinelli's best performances, even last season when he got a period in the side, is when Lacazette was playing centre forward. So Lacazette comes deep, sometimes too deep, and then Martinelli, you know, occupies, he's going to attack the space.
But like, even against West Ham, Martinelli's goal came from Lacazette's pass, and Lacazette was in midfield.
Yeah, interesting. I want to touch on something from the game, and then I got a question that will be quite tough for you. But I was meaning to ask you this a couple of weeks ago.
I think I know what the question is.
But back onto the game, we won't cover all the goals as they kind of went.
But Martinelli's a finisher, man.
But Martinelli is a finisher. That challenge from Ben White. He had a great game.
Absolutely wild. And the worst thing was,
absolutely no knee.
It's just like a concentration.
The worst thing was, did you see Ramsdale and Ben White acting right afterwards? Yeah. So Ben White goes in,
Ramsdale and Ramsdale's like, yes, come on.
And then they high-fived. But Ramsdale, 3 seconds before, this guy took out this guy, and the guy fell so hard that he hit his head on the ground. That's how much of a bad challenge it was. And it was so unnecessary.
It was. Really.
That's
the only kind of damp patch on your day.
It was a quality penalty though.
Like, I was about to say fantastic from Rafinha. But it's exciting times. Like you're seeing the progression. We've seen him stabilize the defense. We couldn't see him, and by him I mean Arteta, we couldn't see him like stabilize our attack and get the forward players into the game and creating chances. And I think over the last three games, Southampton, West Ham and Leeds, we have seen our forward players create more chances. Odegaard's been really good in the last three games. His form has changed. And he's actually been scoring as well. So we brought him in for assists, but he's getting involved. So we have two midfielders
not counting Martinelli and because they're more like wide forwards, but we have Emil Smith Rowe and Odegaard scoring from midfield, which is something that we didn't have last season.
What was your tough question?
I think I know it. I would ask you to rank all three, but I think that's quite evil.
No.
So I don't want you. I want to ask you who has the highest ceiling out of your three kind of real young guns pushing through, and I say pushing through very lightly.
So Martinelli, Saka, Smith Rowe.
Yep.
1,000%. I'm putting Saka number one. Like that's not even a question for me.
And again, this I'm not asking you this question as a
who's better.
One is by far not as good as the others. It's just about your opinion on where you think they rank right now. Might change in a year. I'm just interested.
I see so much more in Saka, even
in terms of ceiling. So you think in 5 years time?
Yeah, I think we're going to be struggling to keep hold of him.
I actually think Smith Rowe.
Yeah.
I think like Saka, I can kind of see where he's going, but I think there's so much to Smith Rowe that I don't even think Smith Rowe knows. Like his pace, like people, we don't see it week in, week out, but he's really quick. His technical ability, he's clinical.
Clinical. He's fourth in the league, is he? With seven,
yeah. And he's our top scorer.
He's our top scorer as well, yeah.
And I think when that confidence starts to grow, and I think he realizes that, hold on, I could be the guy. I thought
your question was going to be, how do we fit in Smith Rowe? Like, who's gonna drop out?
No. Well, that could be another question, but they don't all fit into the team. I mean, it did look like Odegaard was the one who was sitting it all out a few weeks back, but you can't drop him at the moment.
No, he's been.
Odegaard went in the team, and Lacazette was essentially playing number 10 because Aubameyang's playing. So, yeah. I don't think Martinelli's 100% ready to be the first. But it's good to have options on the bench.
Of course, it's good to have options.
Bro, if we don't have ESR on the bench, our bench, you know, we have Pepe and all that nonsense.
I was just about to say, a few weeks ago, I was complaining that we rely on two 20-year-olds. So it's good that we have another 20-year-old who can...
Yeah, when Junior said that, it's exciting times. I think, for me, it's exciting just watching these young players.
Oh, that's what I mean. I don't mean, like, I'm still...
We still have Xhaka in the team, you know, and he could have got sent off. What a mug.
But no.
Oh yeah, the fact he didn't get a booking for that as well is just like, the consistency question.
You know the song Saka and Emil Smith Rowe. Yeah. When Xhaka did that tackle, in my head I was thinking Xhaka should be on death row.
But what I mean is, exciting times is like I think our defense, like Tomiyasu,
fantastic.
The way he was mocked by Sky Sports, what's his name?
Cave. Oh, that guy. I feel bad for him because anytime he tweets, there's Arsenal fans just literally memes.
But then, do you see that sequence of play where the cross was coming in, he blocked the attacker, he goes, keeps the ball, holds up the ball, he comes past his man, and he wins the foul in midfield. Like, Tomiyasu's been a revelation.
When he got injured and Cedric came on, my heart dropped.
Oh, yeah, actually. So what's that injury looking like?
He was sitting on the bench. I think
he's okay.
So he'll miss the cup game probably.
And he'll be back against Wolves.
He should be back soon. But yeah,
Norwich at the weekend.
But yeah, he's been a fantastic signing as well. We really can't complain. Like since the last time I was on, we lost two times. We lost to Man United and Everton. But then since then, that's three games in a week and three good performances. That's the main thing for me, really. The performances, bar the first 10, 15 against Southampton.
But
the rest of those
having
games,
said that, like against Southampton, what I was worried about is that usually in those games, we'll create one or two chances. We created so many. Again, I know it's Southampton tax, but Arsenal against Norwich, who have been terrible. We couldn't create anything.
That was really early as well.
Yeah, we created like one or two chances. But against Southampton, against West Ham.
West Ham, that was a fantastic performance.
Like Saka had Masuaku on skates, bro. He just...
Honestly, like I spent... In a 24-hour period, I probably spent about 12 hours watching videos of Saka. Saka has genuinely changed my life.
I don't think that's healthy.
It's like he's just amazing. Like he's been amazing these last three games as well. Like he could have scored a boatload of goals as well.
So yeah, that's why it's exciting. It's the three youngsters and Ramsdale and the...
Xhaka should definitely be sent off. He's crazy, man. And then when
I'm talking about the back and he's talking about Xhaka.
I thought we were wrapping up the conversation, but I mean, just quickly, Xhaka, the audacity for when they fouled Tomiyasu right afterwards, he was all in the referee's face. I'm like, you're lucky to be on a pitch, mate.
Yeah. Anyway, let's.
Would you be worried to play Arsenal right now?
No. Would I be worried to play Arsenal? I'd be. I've been nervous.
Really? More than nervous, than the team that had Aubameyang in it.
But I think, absolutely. I think you look slightly different proposition without Aubameyang in your team. And that proposition is giving teams a lot less time on the ball, creating more chances, taking more chances. I wouldn't say I'd be worried, but yeah. I think we beat you. But I don't think it would be the 4-0, 5 or 6 weeks ago.
We could have the best team in the world. Go Anfield, we'll still lose 4-0.
You touched on Aubameyang, and he's now training by himself before the Africa Cup of Nations. Do you think that's done then?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's coming back until... Well, I mean, at least until we come back on the AFCON team. But I feel like it definitely must something more than what we know is going on, because you can't just be a day late and then be banished like you don't exist, man.
Well, you spent, months of your life defending him as a player. And I'm not doing this to draw you out, but don't you think isn't it a coincidence that he's come out of the team and you're playing your best football of the season?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a coincidence. I mean,
it's...
There's no denying he's been very poor this season. So, I don't know. We'll see. But, I mean, if the team is functioning without him, then, you know... But, I mean, these three games, although we play very well and I've been enjoying the performances, even if it's West Ham at home, even if Southampton at home leads away, I'd expect to win all of these games.
Of course, you would expect.
But the performances are what's impressed me the most.
Newcastle versus Man City. Now, if you expected anything other than a Newcastle win...
you are a sane human being.
No, because Mark was nodding, so I was like, Newcastle winning. And he was like...
Newcastle are one of two teams that every single time I see them play, I just get frustrated.
Well, who's the other team? Burnley.
Everton.
Oh, Everton. Yeah.
Because I just look at these teams. Newcastle, like, aside from Saint-Maximin, aside from Alan Wilson...
Alan Wilson.
Let me be honest, right? Callum Wilson, his pass is slowly getting redacted right now. His quality player pass.
Well, I mean, I was singing
his praises a couple of weeks ago, saying he could get into 13, 14. I've been watching him, and honestly, he's not impressing me at all. I know it's hard in that Newcastle team at the moment, but
I'm just talking about for Newcastle level.
A senior scout, Mark.
Yeah, it's true. Mark FPL, Mark. For Newcastle level, he's probably one of those... Well, we don't expect Newcastle to be upper end of the table, but he's one of those who probably would survive the Arabian summer. So someone like when I watch Newcastle, I'm like, how on earth did this team come to this level of a bad... Like, the quality is in tatters. Like, there's nothing good about this team. Like, I look at it and I look on their bench, I'm thinking, who could play instead of the ones that are playing? There's nothing. I just look at it, I'm like, Saint-Maximin might hate his life, man. One, he has to live in Newcastle. And two...
He signed a 6-year deal.
Bruh. So seven, weren't it?
Oh, he's seven.
That's a muggins, man. But I just get so frustrated. Yeah. But
I mean, they have Joe Willock, who they sign. And
he's been... I can't lie. Yeah. You've done a Liverpool. You've fleeced Newcastle for him.
You did it at Iwobi.
You've done it. You've done yourself. That's the two sales recently that I can commend Arsenal for.
Joe Willock actually showed something to get a move. Bro, no, I don't think anything compares to what Liverpool did with the Brewster and Sheffield United. Solanke, bro, that's worse.
No, Brewster's the worst. But Solanke's a good player. Bro, Solanke's top scorer in the championship now.
Yeah, Mitrovic is.
What about Ibe?
Jordan Ibe.
Bro, that was... that.
He was meant to be the next Raheem Sterling.
Tottenham got checked, bro. Liverpool got... 13 mil for Danny Ward, and he'd never play for Liverpool.
He'll play against us tomorrow. He's Leicester's Carabao Cup keeper. Yeah. I going to say about Newcastle? Eddie Howe has shocked me, right? And I'll tell you why. I just feel like he's come into Newcastle and hasn't changed much, and I thought he was going to change a lot, and that includes the bland Brexit 4-4-2 formation. It's not working. It didn't work at Anfield. Didn't work against City, hasn't worked for Newcastle all season. Joelinton was practically playing centre mid.
That's crazy. Like,
he's also awful.
Wasn't Saint-Maximin on the bench recently?
He was on the bench against City.
Mad. Joelinton playing centre mid.
But he did come off against Liverpool with a knock, Saint-Maximin.
Oh, yeah.
But also, I don't think that... I think Eddie Howe looks around and he's like,
what have I got?
Yeah,
there's absolutely nothing. He's looking at it, he's like, I didn't even like Fraser and Richie when they were at Bournemouth for me. Like, why do I have these losers with my team, bro? So it's just, honestly, like, their midfield options is probably some of the worst in the world. Shelby, who has no brain. Hayden, who's just the picture of average. Like, he's the definition of average. And then you've got guys like Murphy, who don't do anything. And then Joe Willock's been terrible this season. That's how bad it's got. They got a terrible striker playing centre mid for them. It's like, they are
it's
just
like when
go.
I see, like, any Newcastle lineup, Joelinton is a striker who plays left wing and centre mid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You play anywhere but the position we bought you for. And the money they've wasted as well.
40 million on him.
Yeah. But I mean, just on Man City, yeah. Do you think, yeah, that Cancelo, he watches Trent and then he tries to up him? Because those two are in a battle, like, to see who's the better guy.
The thing is, I think there's not a lot of burden on Cancelo in terms of, like, the creation that Trent has and, like, the responsibility in that Liverpool team, whereas Cancelo,
his job is to play as a centre mid.
Trent has more assists this season than Cancelo in his whole City career. That's a fact, by the way.
Mad. But also, like, Cancelo has a bit of a freedom because of the way Man City play and the way Man City dominate the ball. So Cancelo, I don't know, he just roams around and
he's literally playing alongside Rodri. That's his role. Go play alongside Rodri.
I come in there furiously backing my boy Trent, but Cancelo is quality. He's unbelievable, and the fact that he can do it from left and right back is super impressive. Really impressive.
Do you think he saw Trent go and he's like, I'm going to do that? Obviously, Trent was further out.
But make no mistake about it, that was a banger from Cancelo as well. I think seeing that, I think in answer to your previous question, I think that spurs him on a little bit. I don't think he wakes up thinking, oh, Trent scored a banger, I'm going to have to go and score one. But I think maybe as he set up for that, he thought, oh, I can get myself
healthy up in those conversations again.
It's not a situation like, you know how Ronaldo can't get Messi out of his head. Whereas Cancelo, he's just, I don't think he's
he might have seen it midweek. He's like, oh, good.
Yeah, but Trent, they almost scored from a similar side of the pitch. I don't know why Trent was on that side. Was it from a corner or something? He's playing from like the Mane position, smashed it in. But Man City, what are you guys thinking? Because they won 9 games in a row now.
Yeah. They're just
scored about 15 goals against Leeds.
I think they're the only team in this league. I think Chelsea too. Who can cope with what we're going through at the moment, which is just players on a random one dropping out and you won't see them for the next 10, 14 days because they've got COVID and they're isolating. I think they're the only squad in the league who can deal with that.
Yeah. Although you hear Chelsea fans complaining that their game should have been postponed and blah, blah, blah.
No, look at that first 11.
First 11. And their bench as well.
It is so strong. I was like,
no one said to you, don't put any of your under-23s on that bench. No one said that to you.
And the success they've had from the academy players.
Yeah.
So why would you not put players on their bench?
I found it was... But we're not on Chelsea. We'll get onto that in a second. But ominous, doesn't it? Man City
from this point on, I shall not
answer that question.
Okay.
Are you scared? You are scared though.
No, that's not what we asked. He just doesn't want to answer.
No, he said it's looking ominous.
Yeah.
And you're saying essentially for the league.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm saying I prefer not to speak.
I know we're going to get onto Chelsea.
Doing a hose.
But I changed my mind 100%.
Oh, so when I said it, Chelsea were going to get relegated.
No. Because I'm going back on what I said. Because I've said I think Chelsea are going to win the league. But now they're 6 points behind Man City. 6 points behind Man City is not the same as 6 points behind anyone else.
It's about 12.
It's too much. And at, halfway through the season and they're 6 points behind.
Well, if they can beat City and we can beat City, then it's all back right in a mix-up.
Chelsea's form right now, they're not scoring enough goals.
It's all, ifs and buts. Shout out Tommy.
Shout out all the boys. Sam.
Go on.
Alex. Some bus, Alex.
It's going to be like I said. I prefer not to speak on my Jose vibe, but I mean it is looking ominous. Like I said, and with Chelsea, I not to blow my own trumpet, but I have said that they were.
And Junior said it as well.
And Junior said it. Everyone basically apart from said me, it. Apart from but it was they were. They were producing far more than what I thought that team.
Yeah.
Could at the time, and I think it's just caught up with them a little bit. I know they were unlucky with COVID cases at a weekend, but should have won that game.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you want to go on to Chelsea?
I think that's what we're doing.
All right, okay, cool.
That's what we're talking
0-0 against Wolves.
it is a tough place to go.
All right, so they had no striker, so
yeah, but wait,
Havertz COVID, Chelsea. Werner COVID, Lukaku COVID, so it's difficult, man.
But their best striker plays on the right.
Yeah, I mean, Alonso's their best striker, isn't it? But I mean,
fair.
When in the summer, they sold, well, they got rid of three strikers. They sold Tammy, sold Giroud, loaned out Brozier. We didn't know about Brozier before, so that's fine. And obviously, he's doing well. Now he's getting game time. But they sold two strikers and brought in one. Last year, they had four strikers. Tammy, Giroud, Werner and Havertz, you can sort of, he played up front. They got rid of two and they brought in one. I still think, to me, Werner, he's not a good backup. He's not a good third choice. He's not a good fourth choice. He's not a good striker, in my opinion.
It's interesting. I definitely want to let you finish this, by the way.
Well, but
we had Chelsea fan on last week and Junior asked him, right now, as of right now, players in form, players out of form, what's your first Chelsea 11? And Werner was in it.
Yeah, he said Werner, yeah. I don't really get it.
Because of how he can stretch defences.
But do you watch Chelsea like a Chelsea fan?
No, I watch it like a rational human being.
No, what I mean is...
You can see that this useless guy who sees a dragon in front of a goal. He's honestly, he's worse than when, you know how Torres went crazy when he went Chelsea.
What I meant was, do you watch as much of Chelsea as a Chelsea fan does?
I think
to be as able a to not, judge.
No, Werner. Not definitely not as much as a Chelsea fan. But obviously, what Tommy is looking at, well, most Chelsea fans, they're looking at it from a perspective of what he gives to the team in terms of runs in behind and stretching play and all that. That's valuable, but it's not valuable enough for a striker considering how much they pay for him and the amount, the fact that they're struggling for goals. You know,
yes,
Chelsea are struggling for goals. Their top scorer is. All right, was it? Isn't it Alonso? Not Alonso.
No,
it's Mason Mount.
Oh, yes, Mason.
But I mean, the other, like,
the second one is
Reece James. Exactly. So, Werner is not enough for him to just be stretching. He needs to get goals. That's what he was brought in for, and that's what everyone thought he was.
Just about to say that. That's exactly what he was brought in for. And so, it's a valid point.
On top of that, I know he's been disrupted by COVID and injury and all that, but Lukaku's got 3 goals in 11 games.
Yeah, that's poor.
You know, Martinelli's got
million,
the same, you know?
It? Something like that.
115 million, mate.
Yeah.
So that's what you were brought in for, and still, like, it's just not good enough from a side that's constructed with so much money. You know?
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I just think, kind of the performances have caught up with them a little bit. The important thing for them is that they defend really well and they can keep a clean sheet. So, for example, another team might have gone to Wolves and maybe lost that 1-0, lost the odd chance. But Chelsea can kind of.
I think you're
it.
Right. And actually, in the same breath, credit to Wolves, who exactly what you've just said about Chelsea, same applies to them.
Yeah.
They can, I'm being dead serious, Wolves can keep a clean sheet against any team in the league on their day. Dead serious.
They're third best defence in the league.
There you go. Set up really well. I know they've kept that 5 at the back system, but it seems to work for them and they're really hard to break down. You saw it when we only scored a 94th minute winner against them and that was almost due to a couple of moments of pure brilliance, the long diagonal ball
and the
touch and the cut
and
back.
The finish, yeah.
Other than that, we found it really hard to break them down.
Yeah, there's been a lot of like, and they got kept the clean sheet against Brighton, although Brighton had some horrible misses. He's that guy Mwepu, bro. Man, he hit Rose Ed from underneath the crossbar.
But yeah, we've got Wolves coming up on the 28th if it still goes ahead.
It'll be a tough game.
Yeah, it'll be definitely a tough
game. Home or away?
Home. It'll be a tough game. The manager's got them playing a really like a good style of football where they don't concede many chances. And although he is a bit more erratic than Patricio,
he's definitely got the Bozo gene in him though. He's very capable of losing the game for him. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when he came out against Liverpool and Jota had the one-on-one the open goal essentially, and he kicked it straight at Cody. But that came because he came out and kicked his own player. Like, he's got that ability to do something really stupid. It's very Almunia-like. But I want to give credit to like we are giving credit to Bruno Lage because not only like we are talking about how defensively like compact they are. But they were that way under Nuno as well.
Mm-hmm.
But now, the way they build from the back and get out of pressure and then
They're better attacking as well.
Definitely, yeah.
They look nicer going forward than they did under Nuno.
Yeah, and then like the whole defensively compact thing is further proved by the fact that they were down to 10 men for 45 minutes against Man City, didn't concede another goal, could have nicked the point.
And also the penalty was quite harsh.
Yeah, the penalty was very harsh as well. So you've got to give a lot of credit to Wolves. And But do you guys think, honestly, from a non-biased point of view, should that game have been called off?
The Chelsea,
Chelsea game. From Chelsea perspective, what
I don't
do
think
you
so. I don't absolutely do not think so. Chelsea have more than enough to be able to have an 11 there, which is fair enough. They don't have a striker, but they have the rest of it was fine. And then a bench. It's what Mark said. Why didn't they have under 23s fill up the rest of the
alpha players and two goalkeepers on the bench? But that's the choice. You get 9 players on the bench. Yeah. Go get some under 21s for your bench, isn't
it? Exactly. And I'm so sure there's a couple of players in that under 21s who they've had their eye on for a while, who they thought, you know what, soon he'll be ready for the next step.
Maybe Tuchel just looked at the academy and said, we've loaned out everyone.
No one's there. He's just walked in. What's that?
Tumbleweed.
Thing? Tumbleweed just going across the floor.
Rah, no one's here, bro.
Hey, we're going to have two keepers on the bench. No,
I don't think
I just think Tommy kind of mentioned it to me before the game. And then the lineout came out, and I said to him, I'm going to be honest. Like, that was Mendy. That was a back three of Rudiger, Thiago Silva, Azpilicueta. You had Reece James and Alonso as wing backs. You had a front three of
Kante and Kovacic.
You had Kante and Kovacic in the middle. You had a front three of Pulisic, Ziyech, and Mount.
You can do a lot worse than that. Yeah,
you can do a lot
worse. And Mount
is
their top scorer. Yeah. So, like, I honestly don't feel any sympathy. I think that game should have gone ahead. It did go ahead, and Wolves deserve the point.
Collectively, from we'll talk about that later. Chelsea, rest in piss.
So officially, you're saying Chelsea are out of the tower race.
That's difficult for me to say, but I'm changing my opinion.
Okay, so
it's between
Chelsea
Liverpool and Man City. I'm not going to say
Chelsea won't win the league.
I don't think they're going to win the league. It's too many points. Liverpool are only 3 points behind, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, the thing is, the main thing, really, I know people say defence wins championships. In my opinion, the team that scores the most goals this year will win the Premier League.
Okay.
And those two are just free scoring.
We're literally head and head, yeah, in terms of goals. So. We're literally on the exact same goal difference.
Also, they have Salah.
They have Salah. These lot have everyone. 15 attacking midfielders who are all goal scorers.
Oh, wait. We didn't talk about two players who got dropped against Newcastle.
Foden and Grealish, isn't it?
Yeah, for going out clubbing the night of the Leeds game.
Foden needs to fix up because he did something similar with England.
Yeah.
When they were in Iceland.
Yeah, and he got dropped.
Greenwood and he
Grealish
got dropped.
Has done it bare times as well.
Grealish loves a night out. I know, I read this morning, and I just immediately thought, listen, I could be wrong and I'm just assuming, but I know Grealish is the ringleader there. He's the one who's saying, "Hey,
everyone else,
Phil, come on."
Foden was the only one who said, "Yeah,
he was definitely like, come on, Phil. I can guarantee you.
Come on, Phil.
Let's just go and have one."
He definitely texted Kyle Walker behind. It's like, "You on it?" Kyle Walker's like, "Nah, not tonight, bro." He's like, "Come on."
No, but apparently they turned up to training the next day, and it was evident straight away.
Oh, were they pissed?
That they were no. Well, they weren't like they had but obviously they gone home.
They
and
went
slept
up
a little
the
bit. But they were, you knew immediately they were hungover. Yeah,
They're stinking of death, sweat, and regret.
At an institution like City, when you train to be the best team in the world,
that's Guardiola ain't going to play that.
No, exactly, apparently that Pep was pissed. Like, he was not happy. But what I was going to say is, it's also, I know they're living their life, but we're in COVID season.
Yeah.
And we're still going through it. And we're seeing loads of cases. I think it's 90 cases now. Throughout all of the Premier League teams and staff. So it's a bit thoughtless to go out clubbing when you know that this is going around. And, you know, I personally don't want to see the Prem being stopped again.
I don't want it to go behind closed doors, man. Really, really don't. Cause
I mean, I'm begging.
I think there's certain... I think I personally think, the teams represented by us lot, so you, Liverpool fan, Arsenal fan, I honestly think we're going to be affected the most. You see what Liverpool does, what happened, especially last season.
Anfield,
that Liverpool's fans is like literally, it's not even a 12th man, it's a 15th man, And Arsenal, I honestly feel like our performances have been improved by the fact that we have fans in the ground. So I hope, that, like you said, is so irresponsible as well.
And
because
a lot of the cases are actually from unvaccinated.
Yeah, you see in all the other top leagues, they're running about 90% plus in terms of vaccinated players, whereas in the Premier League, still 68%.
Yeah.
Klopp said it straight away. We're not going to buy any players not vaccinated. Yeah. Get vaccinated. Don't listen to the conspiracy theorists.
And I think that is something that I think just needs... That's the message that needs to be... I think that's why I love Klopp so much. Like, that kind of leadership from your manager to just come out and say things, and he talks about it a lot. Like, I remember he had an interview recently where he was talking about him and his friend had a conversation. His friend didn't believe in getting vaccinated, but he said, like, I don't, he's my friend.
Number.
You know, he goes, he's my friend. But I encouraged him to stop listening to, you know, the conspiracy Reddit theories and just listen to what the experts are saying. And the reason
smiling.
Why we get...
He came smiling.
I mean, it's his dad, isn't it?
Well, your dad I can't enjoy this, no.
No, you love
but Klopp. But I honestly love Klopp for things like that. Like, it shows great leadership.
It shows what someone like that having an influence in it. He's literally got the capability of making 90% of Liverpool get vaccinated by just him speaking.
Yeah, I genuinely think, as when he said that, I genuinely think in the city of Liverpool, vaccination
went up.
I definitely think
he's got that Michael Jordan effect.
Do you guys think, like, this is something like the NBA and the NFL have done, where specifically the NBA, if a player isn't vaccinated, and I know that they travel and America is a lot bigger than than England, but if a player is not vaccinated, he cannot travel with his team. He has to stay in the state. He can play in home games if he's unvaccinated. But the team gets penalized in terms of like fines or whatever if players are unvaccinated. I'm not saying that teams should get fined and players shouldn't travel, but do you think there should be some emphasis from the Premier League to say, okay, for safety, we're going to put this in place.
I hear what you're saying. I think that sets a dangerous precedent because then it's kind of like, well, then do we then have to do that to every single person in the crowd? And then it sets a precedent almost of football is only for the vaccinated. That I would disagree
with. No. Sorry. I'm talking about the players.
Even that. I mean,
it's nothing about the fans. It's just the players.
I'm all for personal choice. That's one thing that I'm all for. So it's a very interesting topic.
Yeah,
that
it's one of those you don't want to really
it's kind of sticky
get
in
deep
a way.
Into it. It's too sticky, yeah.
So I just delete the last 5 minutes.
No, it's true. No, this is interesting. It's fair. It's a fair thing because I think forcing them to get vaccinated, it doesn't work.
It's not a forcing, but for them, it's a choice.
Yeah.
But it's like saying like this.
Essentially, it's forcing them. It's like saying you can't play.
But, for example, I can't remember who on the Warriors team has said that he's not going to get vaccinated. So they said, okay, you can play home games, but you can't play away games.
Yeah, I mean, but just on what Mark was saying, though, like, it does set a bad... Because I'm, like, me personally, I'm double vaccinated, but I just got COVID. I don't think... Being vaccinated doesn't stop you getting COVID.
Of course.
It just... Being vaccinated, it lessens the transmissions and you getting really sick as well. So I think you can still pass it on, like, but, I mean, I think, like Mark says, it will go into really difficult territory because people, are you going to force every single fan to get vaccinated before they come into a ground?
But that's what I'm saying. It's nothing to do with the fans.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. So like, you stop the players.
They might do that anyway with the COVID pass and stuff that is being talked about. But yeah, we're getting way off piss.
Let's not get into this.
Do you guys want to do the
no.
team, agreed team of the season? Yeah, agreed team of the season. I put it in the agenda. Did you not read it?
Mark's expression said everything.
All right, so let's just go through it. Let's freestyle it, Mark.
All right. Of this season.
Say no more.
So who's been the best goalkeeper this season? Who you say, Mark?
You know what? I'll give you lot this one. Give it to Ramsdale.
Ramsdale Junior.
I was going to say between Alisson and Ramsdale.
See, I would give it to Alisson, but I always get the. I'm going for Liverpool players, man, all the time.
But Liverpool are second in the league, man. Yeah. So you can't.
I was going to say Alisson or Ramsdale.
Alisson or Ramsdale.
So we got to choose one, though.
I think that's fair to say.
Okay, then who was your pick? Ramsdale.
Yeah, I was going to say Ramsdale.
Numbers win.
Numbers. Right back, very easy.
Trent
all round. Left back.
But shout out for Treece. Reece.
Man said Treece.
Reece James. Yes. It's not as clear cut. Yeah. But yeah. I think Trent.
No, if we had a full segment for this, a full episode, we could go into detail about why.
But I think Trent is the overwhelming choice in my opinion. And left back,
Cancelo.
Yeah. Very easy.
Absolutely.
Centre backs. This gets a little more difficult. I 100% will say Van Dijk is one of those. Agree with that?
Yeah. Well, this was the first Premier League game he's missed this season due to COVID. So other than that, he's been absolutely unreal. Step back as if he hadn't left.
Who's the other one? I think the ones I'm thinking about. Do you agree with Van Dijk as well?
Yeah, I agree with Van Dijk.
All right, so the only other two people I'd say is Rudiger and Thiago Silva. So which one do you guys
think? I was leaning more towards Thiago Silva.
Thiago Silva?
Rudiger. But Rudiger. I do think Diaz deserves a shout.
Diaz, yeah. Gabriel is a good shout as well, I think. But I think clearly, like, those... Yeah, I'd probably say Thiago Silva as well. I think he's just been spectacular.
Okay.
Thiago Silva. Or a 37-year-old as well. Centre mid, who are we going with?
So what formation are we doing?
Don't know.
4-3-3?
4-3-3 would be fine, yeah. So 4-3-3. One person I definitely want to put in there is Rodri.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Rodri.
Yeah, fine.
Do you, anyone else? It's not just me suggesting to you guys.
Rodri, I was thinking Declan Rice.
Declan Rice I'd put in there as well. And then
let's make this 4-2-3-1 then, because those two in a three-man midfield, I'm not having it. So have those two sitting.
Okay. All right, so who's the 10? I'll say Bernardo.
Yeah, Bernardo.
And then...
Salah on the right.
Salah 100%. Salah on the right, obviously, yeah. The team doesn't exist if Salah's not in it. On the right, I was thinking...
On the right.
Well, on the left. On the left, I was thinking... Jota, pretty much. Emmanuel Dennis is a good shout as well. But enjoyed him. Smith Rowe has obviously been good as well. But I put Jota. And then
striker.
You could even put Jota there if you wanted.
You actually could. Yeah, because not many are scoring that many this season.
So maybe we'll put Emil Smith Rowe and then Jota up front,
or maybe Vardy or Antonio.
No, Vardy. Vardy's scored in patches, but it hasn't been.
Yeah, I'm happy with Jota number 10. And
Antonio had a really good start to the season and it's kind of tailing off a little bit.
That would be my reasoning as well. So yeah, let's go Smith Rowe on the left and then go with Jota up top.
Yeah, that's a good team. So team is Ramsdale, Trent right back, Cancelo left back, Thiago Silva, Van Dijk.
Yep.
Rodri, Declan Rice, Bernardo 10. Left Smith Rowe, right Salah, up front Jota. Good team. All right, okay. So we've got other...
Let's do man of the week before we get away with our, like... So, Michael. I'm going to go with Martinelli for a goal against West Ham, 2 goals against Leeds. His performances are growing and he's getting better and better. And you can see the improvements. He's also adding assists to his game. And the cheeky nutmeg on Suchek, just the cherry on top. So that is my nomination. Marcus.
Cool. This one this week is a bit of a random one, and it's kind of plucked out there. And I don't think this guy's been nominated before, but I'm going to give it to Connor Cody. And the reason for that is Wolves just being solid how they are at the back. That's another clean sheet against Chelsea. He's actually been playing at around about 60 to 70% fitness for the past 6 weeks, but he keeps going and he keeps going and he keeps putting in performances. And he's the glue for me that keeps that Wolves back five so tight knit and so compact. So I think he's due his dues. So I'm going to give it to Connor Cody.
And then we would usually have Tanya. So she'll nominate someone. And then Abdi.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Odegaard. You know, my Norwegian prince. Doing a thing. He's been fantastic last 3 games, specifically this whole week. Loads of chances created and he was amazing against Leeds, culminating with that amazing assist for Smith Rowe's goal. So
we didn't even talk about
shout
it.
Shout out to my boy.
No, I kind of mentioned it.
You
kind of
mentioned it, yeah.
By the way, I would have, if I wasn't so far ahead, I would have nominated Cancelo, but I'm going to give it to Connor Cody because he deserves it.
That's the Liverpool connection.
That's a little cocky there.
No, he deserves it. He really does for me.
Okay, so last year we did something called the Mid-Season Awards. Is this what you're kind of...
Well, not really, just few ones here and there. Quick one. All right, so in this one's pretty easy, but who's the player of the year?
Salah
is very easy, yeah. All right, so who are we going with, the young player of the year?
Are you talking the year of 2021? No, I'm talking about the first
player of the season so far. So Salah, right?
Yeah.
Young player? I don't know why you guys are hesitating. In my opinion, it's clear it's Smith Rowe.
Yeah, Smith Rowe.
No doubt Smith Rowe. Who's the most improved?
That's an interesting one.
Is it bad to say Rudiger?
Because Rudiger, he was good towards the end of last season, isn't it?
Towards the end of last season, but before that, he was a bit shaky, and this season, he's just been...
I have a candidate.
Go on.
Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah.
Because he was hopeless, isn't it? And then now, since he's been playing right wing, I think he's been...
Could we say Bernardo Silva?
I think you can say Bernardo Silva, actually. If you compare this season to last season...
He's had quality seasons before though. So
yeah, but, so has Jesus. That's being quite unfair on him.
And he had a dip as well. So, but he's back.
All right, I'm all right with Bernardo.
Yeah, say Bernardo.
Listeners, I said Jesus. Yeah. all right. So these ones are
surprise.
Emmanuel
Dennis.
Emmanuel Dennis.
Yeah.
Corne.
Corner.
I genuinely think we stop there though and give it to Dennis. I actually think that's a really good shot.
You know, he's like, no one knew anything about him, innit?
Yeah.
Who's the manager of the year so far?
That's interesting.
See, a couple of weeks ago, I would have said maybe Moyes, but West Ham have kind of dipped in form.
I think it's still Moyes.
You think No, I disagree.
Top of their Europa League group with ease, played a back five of full academy players, all 18-year-olds in their last group game, and bro, fifth in the league.
True, but Liverpool lost one game in all competitions.
I know, but if you look back, history tells us under Klopp, this is what we do in the league, other than last season. I hear what you're saying, but with Moyes on West Ham, it's just continuously impressive.
Yeah. I'm all right with giving it to Moyes, fine. But I would have said Klopp.
Okay. Best signing? Ramsdale?
I've got some names, actually. I wrote some down. So best signing, just in case. So let me know what you guys think about these candidates. So we said Ramsdale. We also said Emmanuel Dennis. Mm-hmm. He's bought the season. Conor Gallagher.
Yeah.
Liv Romento. He's been quality.
You got this from Sky Sports, didn't you?
No, I literally Googled
Liv Romento should have actually been mentioned. Not given it, but mentioned for Young Player of the Year.
Yeah. You got Corne, who's been quality as well.
Yeah. Tomiyasu.
Junior, Cucurella. Yeah. Tomiyasu. And Damaro Gray.
Yeah.
So who are we saying is the signing of the season?
Honestly, I think it's Ramsdale.
Mark?
Power through that list again.
Ramsdale, Dennis, Conor Gallagher, Liv Romento, Corne, Cucurella, Tomiyasu, Damaro Gray.
I'm saying Dennis or Ramsdale.
I would have said Dennis as well, though, honestly. But just being, because Dennis was 3.6 million.
Yeah.
Ramsdale's 30 million.
Yeah, Ramsdale's 30 million, but was ridiculed for having two relegations and no one expected him to have the passing range that he has, 8 clean sheets. He's first in a couple of like Prem stats in terms of like
percentage,
how many, like, stuff, yeah. Save percentages and you know, whatever.
I think we'll both go with Dennis. We'll go with Dennis because we've got 2 against 1. And the worst signing. So I've got some candidates, yeah. Dan James, 30 million.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Rondon. I know he's improved recently, but Jadon Sancho has been so underwhelming considering how much he was bought for. Junior Firpo, he's just an awful player.
Just gonna say Junior.
Joe Willock, considering the expectations. And to me, the two standout candidates here are two players who essentially play left back, Danny Rose. And to me, the number one is Sal Niguez.
Let's not even go into conversation.
And also,
about
I put Ronaldo in there as well. I'm joking.
Yeah, I know you're not joking. You locked your phone quick there. Yeah.
So we going with Sal, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you hear my little dig at him playing left back?
Yeah, we heard.
You are wasted, Sal, is, man.
So shall we just put that, like, some options up for people to vote then?
Yeah, yeah.
Like we did last? Yeah. Or whatever. I don't remember what we did last year.
Doesn't matter. We, like, our votes are final, innit?
So. So, yeah. All right, then. We did have a what do we need to talk about, and that we kind of covered it in terms of like the competency of the referees, the competency is a completely different thing, but yeah, the competence of refereeing in this country, we kind of covered it.
Someone put a question up on Twitter saying, is it time to bring in European referees? Because
I saw that.
But like when you assess it, like collectively, England probably has the highest standard of refereeing because if you look at some of the stuff that goes on in other leagues, like, do you remember a couple of years ago, yeah, where I think it was a PSG game and they were playing against Nantes and one of the defenders, he accidentally tripped up the referee and the referee got up and kicked him and sent him off. And then that referee got banned from... that. Like, you would never see that in England because they're under strict rules, isn't it? So yeah. I think collectively, you don't get stupid things that happen consistently in other leagues. Like, I think only two leagues have professional referees and that's England and Italy. Whereas the individuals, you get the best individual referees elsewhere. And do you know what I like the most is the fact that I'm talking and no one's listening to me.
I'm listening to you.
Well, he's heard every word you said.
All right, cool. Because can I get some engagement? You know, so the referees, the individual referees, you get the best. Like in the World Cup, the previous World Cup, no English referees went. And you get the worst individual mistakes coming from referees. So would you guys think, is there time to be like a change, shake up in referees?
I don't know. I saw a picture of referees in the English league, in the English Premier League, right? And it was, I think it was like 16 pictures. I don't know exactly how many refs the English league had. And every single one of them was a white middle-aged man.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, we scream diversity across football, but we don't get that with referees.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Well, to be fair, it's a point that I'm making that doesn't have much to do with the question that was asked. But in terms of what you're saying about not necessarily an overhaul, but drastic change has to come. Yeah, definitely.
Female referees, man?
Not exactly. And it has to. It all comes back to that sense of no accountability for referees. Literally zero accountability. You know, managers come out, and if they say something that authorities don't necessarily like,
they get fined.
They get fined.
Yeah. I'll also say that I think VAR needs to be managed not by their friends.
Yeah.
Because if it's done independently, then we're more likely to get the right decision. If these people can be trained to say, like, okay, this is this and this is that, then if they can review something, I mean, if we can review something and just say, like, Harry Kane, that's a sending off.
It should be some more of an independent.
Because these men are just vouching for their friends.
And we forget, people forget, VAR stands for Video Assistant Referee.
Yeah.
So why are we trusting another hopeless idiot in the studio just because they're in the studio standing up without chair? Yeah.
So, I don't get why they don't get a chair.
Why don't they just get, there's no, like Mark said, there's no accountability because it's just your friend, and there's going to be always a hesitation to overrule the decision of your friend.
So just before we finish, I have these quotes from Junior Stanislas. He goes, I don't think loans are everything for kids. At West Ham, I was used to playing keep ball in tight areas. Then I went on loan and we did keep ball in massive areas. It was easy for me. After 6 weeks, I came back to West Ham, back to smaller areas. I was miles off it. I went to go and get experience on loan, but felt my development went backwards. What do you guys think about that? I know it's not universal because, for example, if you get a loan at a, let's say when Brentford were in the Championship, if you get a loan there, you're probably going to have the same kind of training you'd expect in a maybe like a lower league Premier League team. But what do you guys think about that in terms of, like, for example, Liverpool youngsters going out on loan or Arsenal youngsters going out on loan?
It's a fair point. It's like Chelsea, they're loaned most of the time. They go to a team in Holland, like Vitesse or something, or they'll go to like somewhere. There's different types of loans. There's loans, obviously, where you get the young players to go, and then there's loans where it's like halfway house for you to get the hell out in it. So it's difficult. Like, for example, Arsene Wenger was always very particular about where he wanted to send a player on loan. I remember when his most successful in terms of sending a player on loan and them coming back good is Wilshere, for example. Wilshere went to Bolton. When it was first rumoured, their manager, I think it was Sam Allardyce. So if Sam Allardyce is their manager, bruv, you're not going to touch the ball. Like, you're Owen a midfielder. Coyle. But then, yeah, exactly. When he went, it was Owen Coyle. And Owen Coyle, his Burnley team, they like to play on the ground. And that's where he was quite successful. It doesn't make sense for you. Like, can you imagine Pep sending Palmer, what's his name, Coyle Palmer, to Burnley? Bro, if you're a forward, you need to be 6'4" and have a head made of metal. So it doesn't make sense for certain, that Stanislas is 100% right. Like, and also that will affect him when he goes back, like whoever the young player is as well. So you got to be very particular about where you go. I remember one time, I know this was more of a like to get him out, but do you remember Alex Lebia when he signed for Barcelona and then they loaned him out to Birmingham?
Yeah, I remember.
And then he was like, he said, Barcelona, it was difficult for me because the passing was too quick. I went to Birmingham and the tactic was the defenders kick the ball up and we all run after it. it doesn't make sense. Like, he was like, oh, it's very difficult. But he's played in England before. But then, like, bro, you're going to get 4 or 5 touches in the game and everyone's going to criticise the way you are.
Yeah.
So not only is it going to hamper you in terms of when you go back to your normal club, but then your perception, you're going to be seen as a failed loan. You're saying loan was bad because the style of play is just difficult. So you've got to be very careful about it. What do you think?
I agree with what you've said, to be honest. Mm. It's weird at Liverpool because we don't necessarily loan that many young players out. The ones that we know that we want to come through, Trent, Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, never had loans.
Harvey Elliott was in Blackburn.
Harvey Elliott came when he was young.
Of course, yeah. He came from Fulham. Sorry, yeah. That's a good point. Came from Fulham, went to Blackburn, but that was when he was like young.
He's
but
proper they, like young, isn't it, though?
Like when they hit a certain age, like say 18 or something, it's very rare that Liverpool loan them out to go and gain that experience. They just bring them into the squad slowly and because it's a very specific style of playing, as you've mentioned, the difference from Barca to Birmingham you're going to get different styles of play everywhere you go, and it's about finding the perfect one. And it seems like at Liverpool, the perfect place is home. Obviously, we've got a couple of players out on loan now.
I was about
like
to ask you about
Van der Berg and
the Preston one.
Ginger Donny from who's gone to Preston. We signed him as a youngster. Mm-hmm. He's gone there. To be fair, that's been a good loan for him. Centre back by trade, nailed down the right back spot, first choice, and that's gone really well for him. But he came from Holland and he didn't have much experience of English football. So I think that was more of, let's get him out there, let's get him playing in these English leagues and up to that physicality standard. But in terms of the players, like I said, and you got to think even way back from like Gerrard days, never went on loan. Mm-hmm. Michael Owen didn't go on loan. I don't know, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a super talent like Gerrard and Michael Owen, there's no need for a loan. You're ready, you're in the team. Foden's not gone on loan.
Smith Rowe didn't Saka's go on not loan, gone. Did he?
Well, Smith Rowe did, but only because he was injured so much. So when he was in the team, he was literally...
Where did he go?
He went to Leipzig first, but then he was injured the whole time. He didn't play. But the reason he did is because he got injured and then he couldn't get back in the team and then he just needed game time and then he got injured while he was on loan. And the same thing as well. So if Smith Rowe was fit the whole time and he didn't get injured, he probably would have stayed. I don't think he would have got a loan. So, I mean, most of the time nowadays, especially for big teams, the loans, it's rare that a player is just going to come back. Like we've seen with Tammy, two loans, he played for a bit, then they sold him. Same with, it's only remained to see what we see with someone like Brozier or Conor Gallagher. Mm. Who knows? Maybe for their career, it's best if they stay where they are. We'll see, innit? Cool. Although, to be fair, Chelsea have had like a lot of success with most recent loans. Reece James, Mason Mount, they all got loans and they come back into the team as well. Mm. So, we'll see.
Cool.
Junior's wanted to wrap up this podcast for the last 5 minutes. Sorry, man.
So, Merry Christmas to everyone out there. And if we don't speak to you via this podcast, Happy New Year. And we'll catch you on the next exciting episode of We'll Talk About That Later.
Peace. Sports Social Podcast Network.